uswingdance.club.
No fancy shoes, partner, or skill required.
It's 3 p.m. on Friday, August 28th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Kingston, Ontario. I'm Jesse Bell, and this is your Queen's Football Extended Season Preview. Good afternoon, folks. Jesse Bell here, and we are just two short days away from the official kickoff of the 2026 U Sports football season, and your Queens Gaels enter the year as the reigning and defending Yates Cup champions. And this is a season with immense expectations, high hopes internally and externally around this program. So I figured it was only fitting to provide you with a more in-depth breakdown and preview of the team as we approach that season opener on Sunday, August 30th at Varsity Stadium. And this is going to be split into two distinct parts. I'm going to give you kind of my training camp notes and training camp report, and then we're going to talk about the preseason game that you heard last weekend between Queens and the Laval Rouge Or. I'll give you the recap, I'll give you my thoughts on that preseason game, and we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming matchup against the Toronto Varsity Blues, the regular season opener. So these training camp notes are not super scripted. I've taken some basic notes and I'll kind of expand upon those. And I figure where better to start than with the marquee premier position for any football team? It's the quarterbacks. And in terms of quarterback play, the Gaels, they've got their incumbent starter Alex Vraken back after a breakout 2025 campaign where he threw for over 20 touchdowns, nearly 3,000 yards. Just such a well-developed passer. Tall, perfect kind of frame that you want from a quarterback. He's got long arms so he can really put snap onto his passes. And he was looking great in training camp. Fantastic footwork in the pocket, puts great zip on his passes. You can hear it thud into the gloves of his receivers. He excels at the short and medium game, and he is continuing to refine his deep passing from the pocket and all of his passes while on the run. And by that I mean he has got the power, the distance, the length for deep passing. It's just continuing to put the ball in the ideal spot for his receivers. Sometimes a little bit of an underthrow, a little bit of an overthrow. He's really working on getting that precise placement. And for a player with professional aspirations, that's what you expect in their final season. In terms of the rest of the quarterbacks, there's definitely a competition for the backup spot from what I've seen between the incumbent backup, Anthony Leo, and second-year quarterback, Tyson Gooden. Leo has the experience and leadership edge, unquestionably. Great kid, super smart, fantastic backup. But Gooden is the better athlete with more of your prototypical quarterback frame, being about 6'4", tall, lanky. There's a type. Queens has a type, no doubt. And from what I've heard internally, the belief is that Gooden is kind of the starter of the future and is being groomed into that position. So it's going to be a very interesting battle to see, you know, quarterback two, Gooden and Leo. I think it'll be Anthony Leo, but it wouldn't surprise me if we do see Tyson Gooden getting more playing time in, you know, blowout games, which we could see on this schedule. Okay, moving on to the running back room, and this is a wide open competition for the starting role for running back. Now, Queens, they like to run a backfield by committee approach, which means you've kind of got specialists for, you know, every down or every specific intent on an offensive play. You've got your pass catching running backs, you've got your short yardage goal line running backs, and last year they had Jared Kasari, who could do all of that, complete package. He's gone. He's finally gone. A very long, very celebrated Queens career for the overager Jared Kasari. So, who do you go with? Isaiah Adams is the most experienced running back, and from what I saw at training camp, it looks like he's added muscle onto his frame without costing him that great breakaway speed. Jace Baldwin is the player with the highest ceiling in this running back room. True second-year guy with outstanding burst, good long speed, and really impressive agility. He's so tough to bring down side to side. And, you know, he's going to need to fill out his frame just a bit more, but he could have a Tayshaun Jackson-like impact for the Gales, making reference to the great Laurier running back, who is short in stature, but just so difficult to deal with. Ethan Dahl is the Gales' de facto power back. He's compact, strong, he has great balance. He's your primary goal line guy once again, but I think he's going to be mixed in more with kind of pass-heavy formations as well, serving as like a safety valve option as a receiving running back. We saw him do quite well in that role last year. He's a good pass blocker, and I really think the money play for him will be a, you know, halfback draw play. When you've got kind of a spread formation, you're expecting, let's say, a second and seven that the offense is going to pass, but instead you hand it off to Ethan Dahl, who gets to attack a lighter box as a result. And if he's dealing with, you know, defensive backs, he's going to win that battle 9 times out of 10. So I think he's a player that can be really used effectively as a precision piece in the offense. Jaden Guirsey-McDonald, I thought he looked great at training camp. He was also serving as like a leader for some of the younger running backs, helping them with finer points on drill work. He's a jack-of-all-trades back. And I think if anybody has that Jared Kasari potential, it's him. And by that I mean they get stronger and stronger across the course of the season, eventually taking more starting-level reps. So, we'll see. Big shoes to fill. And then somebody I want to shout out because they always impress me with their physical preparation and performance in training camp. It's Josh Bennett. Every time I see him, he gets better and better. He's well-built, fast, and he just has kind of a quiet leadership trait to him. Moving on to the wide receivers, there's a lot of continuity with this group. Russell Weir looked great in camp, excellent hands, just quick, sudden route running, very vocal leader. Literally the only knock on him is his height, but he looks primed for a big year as Alex Vraken's preferred inside target. Cedric Smith, East-West Bowl participant, arguably the best route runner on the team, good hands, great elusiveness, and he's got a nose for the end zone. I'm thinking he's an all-conference caliber player. Jack Ashby-Jacobs, another kid with outstanding leadership traits. He has big, strong hands, he's got a tall, lean frame, he projects as more of an outside receiver, and I think he's due for his breakout year. Ben Falkowski, now this is an interesting one. He got a lot of Team 1 reps on the outside, and he's got great hands. This is something Coach Snyder has been hyping up since some of his practice performances in 2024. He's got good lateral mobility, he's still developing his physical skills, and we also saw him as a punt returner for the Gales in training camp, and I think he's, I don't know, a player that I'm really intrigued by. Logan Walton was redshirted for the practices I attended, but it looks like he'll be back in action soon. And it's a great thing because we saw flashes of all Canadian potential from Logan Walton last year. He is a touchdown machine. Now let's talk about the H-backs because they're kind of the receivers, kind of in the offensive line category. They're hybrid players, so let's talk about them now. And we're going to start with Mateo Tuioti. He looks like the real deal. I cannot see any reality where he isn't the best H-back in the country. Just watching him run routes, especially, oh my gosh, so fluid, so explosive. He's got great hands. He's a nightmare to cover. Like, he is an absolute matchup nightmare. James and Robbie Preston, both playing H-back, these brothers bring a level of physicality to the position that will be sorely needed with Liam Silverson's graduation. I think James Preston in particular should slot in nicely as the other starting H-back, more of your blocking-focused back compared to a more receiving-focused H-back in Mateo Tuioti. And hey, I like what I saw from Yannick Daig, who we didn't see much of last year, but we saw flashes in 2024, and I think he's another more receiving-focused back. So if you look at Mateo Tuioti and James Preston together, that's kind of your receiving and blocking combo for the older generation, and your younger equivalent is Robbie Preston and Yannick Daig. That's just how I see the situation. Moving now to your line of scrimmage players, we're going to talk offensive line and defensive line. And with the offensive line, Riley Sherman continues his steady march towards all-Canadian status. He's a great build. He's a polished technique player. He has leadership intangibles. I think he could be the best center in the country, if not this year, then within the next 2 years. Daniel Sudux and Alex Hurst are the primary options at guard, from what I saw. Both are experienced players with strong technique. We saw Hurst play in the East-West Bowl this year, and I think they make a nice complement to their battery mate, Riley Sherman, who is at center. Riley Bishop, Nate Skeldon, Sean Matheson, these are all guys I saw taking reps at tackle. This is going to be the biggest question mark for the Gaels on offense, as Nick Hennig, now playing in the NFL, and Jazz Kara, he's graduated as well. So your two veteran tackles, the two leaders on that offensive line, are gone, and it's going to be, I think, a bit of an adjustment. There could be some growing pains early on as whoever ends up playing tackle for the Gaels kind of, you know, they get their feet under them. They get those in-game reps. The defensive line, oh my goodness, this is a frankly disgusting collection of talent. Stephen Kapaia is back after a summer spent with the Calgary Stampeders. He's the ultimate speed rush player. He has freakish athleticism, and his technique has improved so dramatically over the last two seasons in particular. He is one of the premier pass rush players in the OUA, and a guy who I think, once again, all Canadian potential. Blink and you'll miss him. We call him Scary Steve for a reason, and that's because he is a quarterback's nightmare. Oliver Jackson is also back, and Stephen Kapaia, drafted by the Stampeders. I think Oliver Jackson is the next Queens defensive lineman that will be drafted. He is an unbelievable player. Top three pass rusher in the conference last year. He'll be aiming for the number one spot this year. He's got great flex in his hips and bend in his knees. And he's also got these long, strong arms, so he's able to disrupt offensive tackles and then either wiggle through, push past, or, yeah, just blaze by them. Really special talent. Tristan Burrell, Tom Nitschke, and Carter Martin look to be the primary options at defensive tackle. All three of them saw playing time last year, with Carter Martin making an all-OUA rookie team. And we may see these kind of bigger body guys playing more of a nose tackle technique, because the Gaels, we saw last year, like to utilize a three-man front, so that's one defensive tackle and two ends. They've also rotated in with a four-man front with your two and two split. But either way, three very talented tackles, and I think they're going to make nice complementary pieces to the outstanding ends around them. And on that note, let's talk about two other immensely talented young defensive players. Eli Bennett. Man, this kid impressed me in scrimmage. He had a great season last year as kind of a rotation piece, and he's got breakout written all over him. This is a kid who would be a starting defensive end on most other teams in the OUA, and he's, you know, buried behind two CFL caliber players right now, but I expect we're going to see a lot from Eli Bennett in 2026. He's like a top tier piece on this Gaels defense. Lucas Durant, now a young guy who hasn't had quite as many in-game reps as Eli Bennett, but I don't know, something about Lucas Durant makes me think he's going to be a solid contributor in year two. Young kid from Saskatchewan, big farm boy strength. Just keep your eyes on number 90, Lucas Durant. Let's move now to the linebackers and the secondary. And if you're talking linebackers, the number one name at the top of your list should be Jacob Baldwin. Switching from number 30 to number 8, this kid is for real. He's got the highest ceiling of any player on this team. Not just all Canadian potential, but he could very well be the best defender in the country. He is outrageously fast with both lateral and forward movement, a strong tackler, and as we saw in the Yates Cup, a sure-handed presence at the will linebacker. Jeremy Hiscox looks like he'll be taking over for Justin Pace at the middle linebacker spot. He's got a big body and good tackling instincts, the kind of things you look for in a Mike linebacker, but he's obviously got massive shoes to fill. I think we'll also see Brandon Spence in the mix inside, especially in like 3-4 fronts as the other middle linebacker. And of course, how could we not talk about DJ Ryan, one of my favorite players to watch? He's got that kind of hybrid role where he'll go down and play defensive end. Sometimes, I swear, we've seen him at defensive tackle. He can play on the line of scrimmage. He can play in the box. He's a fantastic tackler, stud on special teams, and he just has a nose for the ball. He always seems to be making the biggest possible plays when his team needs them most. In terms of like rotation guys that I think will be solid contributors either on defense or special teams, Kalawa Audi, Demetrius Allen, Alex Tuck. Those are the three names that come to mind for me, but this is a really deep linebacker room. It's very possible that I'm missing somebody. In terms of the defensive backs, this last year was the unquestioned strength of this team, but it's going to be a bit more of a question mark this year as every single starter save one player is gone, and that's Ian St. Arnaud, the only known quality on this defensive backfield. He can play corner, he can play defensive halfback, and he can play safety, so he's a great chess piece that can kind of be moved wherever the Gaels need him. and he is a sure-handed defender with electrifying return abilities. Wilson Heslop is a guy who was like a bubble rotation player last year, and he projects to be, I think, either a halfback or a safety for the Gales. And then a couple other names to be aware of, Cordell Ipale, Dan McQuede, and Cohen Hubbard, all look to be guys in that starting unit. Not totally sure on who's playing where yet. My guess is that Cordell and Cohen Hubbard are going to be the corners, and Dan McQuede is either a halfback or a safety. And let's wrap things up with special teams. A couple known quantities here. Tyler Mullen is back for his final season and will almost certainly rewrite the program's record book for kicking. He's hyper-accurate, and he's slowly added power into his kicks. He's routinely making professional-caliber kicks at this point. Matt Driver, a bit inconsistent, but when he gets into a punt or a kickoff, he launches this thing into the stratosphere. If he can fine-tune his technique, he's going to be a truly frightening presence on special teams. The kid is huge. He's like 6'6", and he's got the kind of long levers you look for in a top-tier punter. And once again, as he gets more experience, a guy who transferred from soccer to football, he is going to be a scary, scary special teams player. And in terms of your return game, we saw a number of guys kind of cycling through return positions, but the ones I saw the most were Ben Falkowski, Noah Loudon, Cedric Smith, and Jace Baldwin. Now, Ian St. Arnaud looked to be their primary on field goal return, which is understandable given, you know, 3 touchdowns in 1 year. But, I think Noah Loudon was the one that I found to be the most interesting. Smaller player, but he's got great vision and agility. And look, when you're a smaller, more compact guy on something like punt return, especially where you can kind of get lost in the crowd, it can be really difficult to bring those guys down. See Tayshawn Jackson from Laurier as an example. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, hear a quick word from, you know, some of the other great programs here at the station, and then we're going to come back with part two, talk about preseason football, and give you a quick little hype up for the Queens and Toronto game on Sunday, August 30th. I'll be right back.
30 years and they're still letting us near microphones.
It's true. We've got the music, the stories, and absolutely no filter.
From deep cuts to guilty pleasures, if it made noise in the last 3 decades,
we're probably playing it and maybe laughing about it.
This is 30 Years of Nonsense.
Hosted by Terry and Sherry Doherty.
Only on CFRC 101.9 FM, Kingston's campus and community radio.
Turn it up
and embrace the nonsense.
Hi, my name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
Welcome back to our 2026 Queens football season preview, and we've covered training camp, so let's talk about the other big schedule on the Gales preseason lineup, which was their preseason game against the perennial powerhouse Laval Rouge A'Or. Laval is one of the great success stories in all of Canadian sports. In just their 30th total season, they have over 12 national championships, 17 conference championships. They are one of the great teams in Canadian sport. And once again, this is all in a 30-year window. Unbelievable stuff. And they always recruit the very best players, largely from Quebec, but they do get a lot of guys from across the country because Laval is this kind of football mecca. It is this unquestioned power school. They put the money, they put the time, they put the resources into their teams, and as a result, they have made the Quebec Provincial Championship game for, I think, 22 seasons in a row, something ridiculous like that. So what I'm trying to say is this is top-tier competition. And that was very much on display early on as the Laval defense, specifically the front six, they were just wreaking havoc on the Gales. Kind of a three-man front with 3 linebackers and then a very DB-heavy defensive scheme because the Gales were coming out with a bunch of a very, very pass-heavy focus. So Laval was sending a bunch of pressure largely through the A-gap and disrupting the Gales' passing offense early, forcing a really ugly two and out. But the Gales would rebound despite surrendering that two and out and surrendering a 56-yard kick return, punt return into the Gales' red zone. So Queen's first defensive series started inside their own 10-yard line, and it ended two plays later with an interception from a young player that is, I think, second year total, but first year of eligibility, Dan Mukwete, rocking number 24, last worn by current CFLer Ashton Miller-Melençon. And Mukwete, it was a beautifully timed interception in the end zone. And that did kind of, I think, take a lot of the pressure off the Gales. The first quarter was very defense-heavy, but Queens did have a 3-2 lead at the end of the first quarter. So a field goal and a safety. And it remained low-scoring for much of the first half. But this Queens passing offense really did start to catch fire. And we saw a long reception from Logan Walton, and he would cap off the best drive of the first half for the Gales with a touchdown on a beautiful play-action motion. So Queens did take a lead into the half, and it was just a really physical back-and-forth game. I would say nobody really dictated the pace, or if they did, it wasn't a constant thing. There was a lot of ebb and flow, a lot of back-and-forth, a lot of momentum shifts in the first half. But I think Queens was the slightly better team, as evidenced by that narrow lead at the end of the first half. And in the second half, both teams started, you know, dropping into their bench. The starters were done for the day. So now it's time to see what your second and third level players can accomplish. And this is when the game really started to get captivating for me. First and foremost, both offenses started to connect against the second and third team defenses. So there was a lot more scoring, there was a lot more action. And Queens in particular, I think, looked to be the much more polished, deep, and conditioned team as the second half went on. And there's two names on offense that you're gonna want to remember, because this game was a great coming out party for both of them. Number 11, Ben Falkowski, who had just a ridiculous debut game in 2026. He played a bit in 2025, but was more of a practice and a scout team guy. But my goodness, did he show flashes of utter brilliance, including a 60-yard touchdown in the third quarter. He also had one of my favorite plays of the game, where quarterback Ashton St. Germain, the other breakout star for the Gales in this preseason contest, he was trying to complete a pass to his intended receiver, Noah Loudon. The ball went over Loudon's head, but Falkowski just made this heads-up play, snagged the ball, and ran for about 30 yards with it. So Ben Falkowski finishes with four catches and two touchdowns, over 115 yards. He was playing out of his mind, and we'll get back to him in a moment. But the other player on offense I hinted at, I alluded to, was backup quarterback number 19, Ashton St. Germain, who wasn't even on the dress roster amongst the quarterbacks last year. I think it would have been fair to say he was quarterback four at most. So we've seen this meteoric rise in training camp and now into the preseason for Ashton St. Germain. And he went 12 for 15, threw for 239 yards in preseason with two touchdowns, one to Ben Falkowski in the third quarter, and then the game winner in the fourth quarter with less than, at the time, 15 seconds on the clock. So these two kids on offense really had an incredible coming out party. Defensively, we talked about Dan Mukwete with his interception, but a couple guys who really impressed me, both younger and a bit older. I want to talk about number 34, Jaden Blackman, who used to be a running back for the Gales, but they started converting him over last season, and this is the first action we've seen from Blackman on the defensive side of the ball, and he showed off his veteran poise, although he's still learning the position. It's a very young Queens secondary. Blackman, he looked like he was well accustomed, well acquainted, just really well equipped to succeed in this role. He was directing traffic on defense. He had a couple pass breakups. He had a tackle. He had some solid returns on special teams. Just a really good performance from one of your veteran guys. Another player on the defensive side of the ball who I think really excelled was number 94, Sam Clark. Oliver Jackson didn't play in the preseason game. He's fine. They're just taking precautions with him. He is expected to dress for this week one, a game against Toronto. But Sam Clark, along with Eli Bennett, those two really kind of filled the void for
you know, lacking number 52 for Queens. They were getting great pressure on the edge. Sam Clark in particular had a number of fantastic plays, creating havoc in the backfield, a tackle for loss, a couple tackles near the line of scrimmage. I also want to shout out number 98, Tom Nitschke, a Frontenac Falcon Kingston product who had two sacks in the preseason game. And the last defender I want to highlight is number 9, Callum Green, who just played the position of linebacker with such reckless abandon. He was incredible. A career game from a guy who, once again, kind of like Ben Falkowski, Ashton St. Germain before him, really didn't see any extended playing time for the Gaels, but he made the most of his minutes on that preseason clash, let me tell you that much. So Queens does win 29-27. Special teams-wise, it's what you expected. Tyler Mullen was consistent and great, as always. We got to see the Queens' backup kicker, Mark Cappuccini Gutierrez, who, trust me, folks, in about a year's time, this kid is going to be unbelievable. One of the strongest legs in the country as the backup kicker. A little bit of time, a little bit of muscle mass, some poise, some polish. He is going to be crazy good. And Matt Driver scored the final points of the game. He kicked a rouge on the final kickoff, which I think was just a really beautiful capper. So yes, Queens, just to set the scene, down by 7, minute 10 on the clock, they drive 100 yards, they complete a pass to Ben Falkowski, and then they immediately go for 2, throwing it to another young player, Noah Loudon. They were up 28-27, Matt Driver adds the rouge, they win 29-27. First time they've played Laval since 2009, and the Gaels, they skunked them again. This is, without exaggeration, a possible preview of the Vanier Cup. That is the level, that is the expectation, that is the caliber of both teams. And it was on display last Saturday. Just a fantastic football game from start to finish. If you missed it, you really missed something special. And now, looking ahead to Sunday's game, as the Gaels will be on the road, they'll be in Toronto to take on the Varsity Blues, and Toronto, they also had a preseason game, but it wasn't a particularly pretty one for the program. You're going to hear me talk more about that during the CFRC Power Plays pregame show, but let's just say these two programs are entering this season opener from very different positions, both in the recent history, last year, historically, over the last 50 years, and over the last week. It's just two teams, I think, that are starting from very different positions, and two teams that I think will go in very different directions over the course of the season. Hey, football games aren't played on paper. They're played on turf. But Toronto, this is a just ridiculously young team. They lost a lot of their best players, including their unquestionable best player in wide receiver Chris Joseph. The cupboards are a little bare this season. Usually that means future years you're going to be eating a little better, but yeah, we might see some short-term pain for the Varsity Blues as they prepare to host the reigning and defending Yates Cup champion Queens Gaels, who will come into that game riding high off a preseason victory over a team that I don't think any outsider expected them to beat in the Laval Rouge A-Or. So what do I expect from this Toronto and Queens game? Well, Queens should take care of business early and often, and this might be something of an extended look for some of those QB2, QB3, backup players on the roster. If Queens does what they have shown they can do against, you know, Toronto, York, Waterloo, teams of that same general caliber, then it may be a short day at the office for a lot of the key veterans for the Gaels, which is not a bad thing because they have got a long and grueling schedule. They've got a week 2 bye, which means they're playing from week 3, possibly all the way until the end of November without much of a break in between. Queens really does need to, I think, earn that first round bye if they want to make a deep playoff push, and that all starts on Sunday night, 7 p.m. against the Toronto Varsity Blues. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'm going to leave you with a quick promo of that game, and we'll get back to your regularly scheduled programming with the Kingston Curator, hosted by the one and only Genevieve Hinch.
After 9 long months, Gaels game day makes its triumphant return to CFRC.
Queens Gaels are golden once more.
To Tune in on Sunday, August 30th at 6:45 p.m. to catch all the action that makes you stand up and say...
OMG!
This is Canada's most exhilarating sports broadcast.
And it's picked off, picked off, picked off.
This is Canada's gold standard of football action.
The Gales stop the Griffins short.
This is Gales game day.
Running hard, breaking away. Touchdown, Queens.
And it can only be found on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Part of the same mission and journey and project together. So he is now our bass player, the conductor.
Wow.
His name is Juan. He's from Colombia, and he's just a multi-instrument, multi-talented musician. And then another singer in this choir, Ricardo, he's from Italy, also looking to meet people. Mm-hmm. We met that way. So when you move somewhere, you're looking to connect, and all of these pieces just kind of fell into place that we all wanted to do music.
Wow. And Nusha, I read about you that you didn't really kind of know that you had a voice for music until a couple years ago. So how did you kind of come about that, discover that? And as well, now you're so comfortable performing on a stage. What was the process for that like?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I like to write about that a lot because I discovered that I enjoy singing about 2 years ago, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it was as if somebody took a shovel and smacked me across the head and said, you need to start singing. And I was like, sure thing, I'm just going to follow whatever this is saying. But I had severe stage fright. I had hardly any musical background. I learned guitar when I was 10, so I knew GDC, but that's mm-hmm. probably about it. And I knew kind of in my lower register I could maybe sing a couple notes, but not anything that went higher. My voice broke. So the shower was the only place where I could really sing. But then I just kind of followed this intuition and I went to see a vocal therapist and I said, please get me ready to sing in front of people because this is, I guess, what I really want to do. And she really helped me and I cried a lot in those sessions. Every session I was like, I can't do this. And all of this like past trauma of feeling stifled and not being able to express myself mm-hmm. came out and I kind of worked through it. And she got me to a point where I could start taking vocal lessons, which I now still take. I had one vocal coach and I have another one. And at that point, I met Kyle. And I said, would you help me write a song? And he said, yes. People usually, we didn't know each other. So mm-hmm. I just said, would you help me write a song? And luckily, he said yes, because now we have 106 songs and a band.
Wow.
And we perform and do all of those things. So I answer your question?
Yes, you did. Right. That's incredible. And I totally understand where you're coming from because, singing can be a very intimate thing and it's nerve-wracking at times. So mm-hmm. I just want to say, it's so great that you kind of overcame that.
Thank you.
And look how wonderful you guys are doing now. So that's truly amazing. And I imagine with everyone kind of from different places, everyone's bringing a little something different to the band. And it probably took some time to kind of figure out what fir and bergamot actually sounded like. So how did you start finding that sound? And how did you know you wanted to pursue this pop and rock sound for the band?
Yeah, I think really at the start, at the core, it was Nusha and I writing these initial songs. Mm-hmm. And we just found harmony together in the themes that we wanted to write about, love, loss, life, and then just our voices. We know exactly how we harmonize now, and it was just fun, this journey of how our voices blend, and we can blend them into rock songs, and we can also blend them into really folksy, acoustic-y songs. So we just kind of let that harmony drive the songwriting and the genres. And then when we started adding to the band, our bass player added just this worldly melody on bass that you don't really hear in a lot of rock songs.
Yeah.
So it just became very eccentric all of a sudden, what he added. And our drummer is just like, Animal from the Muppets. It's like you let him out of the cage onto a kit and he just goes.
Yeah.
And he is that energy in our concert.
Wow.
So all together, we're really nailing down what that vibe is all together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's eclectic. And I think that's what's really neat about the four countries coming together.
For sure. And I like that you don't really have like restrictions on anything. It seems like it's very just open and you're bringing in everyone's talents and their interests and their passions into the music. So I think that's very cool. And that kind of brings me into songwriting a little bit. I know you just mentioned, so you have over 106 written songs. That is fantastic. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, congratulations with that. That's pretty incredible. And so when you sit down to write a song, I'm curious, where does it usually start? Does it start with the music, the lyrics? What's your process for that?
Well, it's always different, but it's usually a feeling that needs to come out. And I think something that weighs on you on a daily basis, something that's troubling you, something that inspires you or a passion, it usually comes from a theme that I just want to see come to life in an artistic way. And sometimes it's a page in my journal that I wrote. Sometimes it's a Facebook message from an old friend. Sometimes it's something I see in the park. Or just a relationship dynamic between Nusha and I or someone else in the band or family, friends, you name it. But it usually comes out there. And then it comes into, well, how do you express that musically? Is that country? Is that, you know, how do you find that in terms of a melody and chords? So it gets a start there. But then Nusha and I, we really try to finesse. And Nusha's incredible with words and vocals and really pushes the meaning of songs and how they fit with melody. And then how do we take it from there?
So we usually work out these acoustic songs. Most of them, Kyle starts and then I kind of come in at the point where we need to find the right key, the right tempo and everything. Mm-hmm. And then when we have that down, we bring the acoustic thing to the band. And that's when Juan adds these melodic bass lines, really amazing. And he's this amazing worldly musician, so he knows, so he says, okay, let's add a stop here, let's add an emphasis here. He rearranges some things. And Ricardo, just we usually do a Logic track, and you just add some
stock drum,
and he just replaces that completely and upgrades it. So I think it's everybody contributes to the songwriting process. Yep.
Wow, cool. And I like that. That's cool that everyone's contributing to that. Mm-hmm. And kind of like you said, when you're writing with different people and there's different ideas in the room, how do you work through kind of disagreements at times? And are there ever moments when someone has to really fight for an idea? Do you find?
It's a great question. Mm-hmm. And being in a band is you really need a democracy in terms of everyone needing what they want out of this creative project. So absolutely. We have multiple songwriters in the band, and we all want to see our creations come to light. So we try to be really fair in terms of if you write, it needs the light of day.
Yeah.
It needs to be tried and finessed together. So we come at it where it's very open in that regard, but we're also open to feedback. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important, that if a song comes to the band and someone says, great, can we make some changes? We have to be open to that too.
Yeah.
So it's very lean in terms of how we do it and very open-minded.
I agree.
Nice. And obviously, all of that writing has now led to your debut EP. So what did putting that together, that first project, kind of teach you about yourselves, your songwriting, and just one as a band? I'm curious to hear. Yeah, Nusha.
Wow. Everything. So our goal with releasing this EP first was we just have to get some music out there so people can hear us. Mm-hmm. We've been getting requests. We play live shows and people go like, okay, where can we listen to you? We're like, nowhere really. Then we tried going to a couple studios, but we didn't really know what we wanted from them. We just kind of expected, okay, we have this acoustic song, now please create exactly what I'm envisioning, even though I don't know what it is. And then we figured out we need somebody internal who knows music production so we can really describe our sound and really explain what we want. And Kyle became that person, so he learned music production. So I think that's the biggest skill that we learned in this time. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, it was a major lift because we're all working on the side. So to take on a new skill and go from amateur to something that you can actually put out on Spotify and Apple was a lot of learning. But it's really true that, you know, when you ask a producer to, you know, handle your sound, you're asking a lot in terms of what they're going to steer. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know what we wanted. And when we get to do it, we do 100 takes on vocals and 100 takes on guitar, and we try every effect on drums, and it gets us to the point where, like, I hear it. We're starting to feel that vibe of what we're trying to accomplish. So it was a lot of work for five songs.
Yeah.
Now that we're starting to get the hang of it, yeah, we can see that we could do an album and it's not going to be that much of a lift.
Yeah. And I'm curious, what was the selection process behind this? So yeah, with so many songs written, how did you decide to release these certain ones for the EP?
That's also such a good question. It's songs that resonated most with the audience when we played them. We play them on every show, so it seemed like it was something that got some sort of response when we when we gave it out. And we also like the songs. So maybe it's when we were talking about genres before, I was also thinking, it's also the genre that I enjoy most in listening to. That's the bands I find. So I just put on it what I like. And I assumed other people will like it as well. And I think that,
It's also a great mix of our sound. It's five very different songs.
Yeah.
There's a groove song, rock song, ballad, and inspirational tune. So I think the coolest part right now is asking people, what was your favorite song? And it actually really helps us direct, should we do a little bit more in that direction? Or it gives us a sense of what people are really appreciating.
I like that. Yeah, a little bit of everything for everyone to get a taste of and see where it takes you. And I also want to talk a little bit about what happens outside of actually making the music, because being this up-and-coming band and artist, it now means so much more than writing and performing, for sure. So what has been the biggest challenge of trying to build yourselves as musicians while also doing everything else that comes with it?
In this day and age, you have to be a lot more, obviously.
Yeah.
You're automatically a content creator. A marketer. There's a lot of things that go along with it. But I think for me, the small things matter. And we try to do a lot of thoughtful touches to the people that appreciate our music, that come to our concerts. We had a really huge concert in June. It was our first big ticketed concert. And we made homemade merch for everybody
that
came.
Yeah.
And it was these little glass bottles with matches, about 15 matches and a striker on the bottom, our logo and a little cork lid on the top. And it was just an appreciation gift. It was completely free and was our gift to our audience. And things like that have paid off for us in terms of wanting more, connecting with us, sharing us with friends. So I'd say a lot of the little things count, and we're still trying to figure out those big things too.
Yeah, what I struggled with most, well, least I would say the singing, that comes most natural, and I enjoy doing all of the time, and I could just sing all day, and that's fine. I enjoy learning. And but the hardest thing for me was the social media, because we're all kind of posting, but I guess I'm doing most of it. And I still am kind of looking for and testing things out, and some things just don't work at all. Some things work. So if there's anybody in the audience that would like to help me, please contact me. But yeah, that was definitely the hardest, and I'm still figuring it out.
And I think the other big thing is just adjusting our expectations. We just finished our first full year as a band, and we're trying to just celebrate the fact that we got to a certain place. And of course, there's always a exponential limit of how far you can go.
Yeah.
And I think it's just being proud of where we're at, seeing where we could go. And then just kind of, we have band meetings, like business meetings, and we try to divvy it up. What's our strategy outside of music to make our songs heard? So we try to do it like a business in some ways, but we're all busy and we can only do so much, and that's okay.
Yeah. Well, just so you know, I was doing a little research and I saw your website and all your social media, and I think you guys are doing a great job on that side, because it is
Thank you.
I thought it was very, very well done. And I think, again, that is such an important part of nowadays with musicians. It's, a lot of people don't seem to realize is that side of kind of social media production. It's also maybe sometimes not about just only the music now. It's also about getting yourself out there and reaching those audiences, for sure, which can be challenging at times. But yeah, I just want to say that I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really liked
Thank
it.
You.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess the other side of being kind of a newer band is that you're still trying to figure things out, for sure. Like you said, you've just celebrated your 1 year as a band together. That's amazing. So has that given you more freedom to experiment, would you say, and kind of try things without feeling like you're kind of stuck in one particular sound or genre?
Yeah, I think we experiment constantly with our sound, so we don't feel like we're tied to to any expectation, because there's often this statement like nobody's even going to notice if we change, because we're at that 1 year small mark. So it's a really nice luxury to be at this stage where we can really try out new things. And we did something months ago at a concert where we let our bass player do one of his songs acoustic. Instead of playing bass, I play bass, he's playing acoustic, he's singing very different sound than the rest of our songs, and it just turned into a crowd favorite, and people coming up like, that was the highlight of the show. So we get these opportunities to just, let's try blowing it up tonight and doing something very different, and we might learn a lot. And it's the same with social media and website and everything we do. We just kind of trying things out still, but that's the fun of it.
I love that. It must be nice just to kind of have that freedom, for sure, and that creativity aspect, knowing that you can just switch it up and kind of see what happens. And sometimes it's always a good outcome, but yeah, that's really cool. And now going into these kind of performance side of things, I have a question. So what has been kind of your favorite performance? Do you guys have a memorable moment from one of your performances that really has stuck out with you?
Oh, I have two. I have two performances.
Let's hear it.
We have one of them was in front of the City Hall in Ljubljana, and that was a part of a bigger festival, but there was hundreds and hundreds of people. Yeah. And that was just, in terms of playing for that many people, very exhilarating. And it's definitely the direction we want to go to towards. That was very cool. And my favorite moment was in our performance in one of the biggest venues in Ljubljana where you can play as a band. It's called Ortabar. And I spoke about what we were talking about before, about my overcoming my fear of singing. And I was just very candid and genuine, just felt like the right moment to say it. And I had people come up to me afterwards, and they wanted to know who I was learning to sing with, and also who did my vocal therapy. So I just told them where to go and what to do. But I feel like it was a very inspiring moment for me and for the audience at the same time. So that was probably my favorite thing. I love sharing that. I love sharing overcoming things.
Yeah.
Because I think if I can do it, anybody can do it. And I feel like everybody has a little wish and desire to do something that maybe they're a bit afraid to do. And I would just like to tell everybody, just go for it, because who cares really what anybody thinks?
Yeah, I love that. Kyle, do you have any memorable moments you want to share?
Oh my goodness. I love every concert, so it's really hard to pinpoint one. I think I gain so much from every single show in terms of what songs our audience appreciates. But yeah, I do think the one that we had hundreds of people in front of us, and like just a sea in front of us on the main street of the capital city, was just a moment where it just felt like we're getting to a different level in terms of being heard. So we sounded great that day. The sun was shining. It was just one of these moments, like, appreciate this right now.
Yeah.
And I definitely did.
Oh, that's amazing. And now going into this kind of international side of the band. So is reaching people outside of where you're currently based, so Slovenia, something you're thinking about? Maybe a performance in Kingston, I don't know. But yeah, what's that like to see for the international side of things?
Mm-hmm. We're definitely going to attempt to reach out. We spent most of last year all in Ljubljana, so that's why we're getting gigs. But we're open to any. I would love to play in Colombia and Kingston and Italy. So it's definitely something we're thinking about.
Maybe there's going to be like a international Let's Visit Our Families tour.
We'll
be in Kingston, we'll be in Colombia, we'll go to Rome in Italy. But you know, the year ahead, it's we're going to try to perform as much as possible, because we just grow a lot that way.
Yeah.
But we're also going to double down on recording too, and just put out a lot more singles and just keep getting more traction that way, and an audience and social growth and all of these things. That it's a snowball, so it all matters.
Yeah, best way to do it. And finally, now that you have this EP that is out and you've reached some pretty big milestones together, what is next? I know you just mentioned a little bit about what you're planning, but what is next for Fur and Bergamot? Maybe any upcoming shows you want to highlight or anything fun happening? And what are you hoping to do from here?
Well, some of the singles that will be coming out, we're just really excited about them, because these songs that we put out there, they're our oldest songs. So on one hand, we're so excited for them to get out there. The other hand, we're like, we've heard these songs a billion times by now. the new songs we're super excited about, where it's very different sounds, really fun radio-friendly stuff, so very quite varied. So that's going to be a big push. And then what else would you say that we're going to be really pushing forward this fall?
Definitely performing a lot and getting, yeah, I think what you said before, getting these new songs, also our EP, we haven't really properly promoted it yet. We're going to do that in autumn and make sure that the songs get heard, but also that we get in front of as many ears and eyes as possible. Yeah. So...
yeah,
we're going to hustle.
Yeah, hustle, better live sound.
Live sound, that's right. We're researching how to make our, what to do with our live show, because so far we've just been, I guess, playing, and now we're going to create a show.
Yeah. So we're not quite at pyrotechnics or anything right now, but we're getting to a point where we can just have a lot of big moments that people can come home and be like, wow, I really connected and I felt things at that concert.
Yeah, just expanding your audiences. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, you two, for coming on the Kingston Curator. I am super excited, to hear about you guys grow and see what you're producing now. I truly thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, we'll get into some of your music now.
Cool. This was fun. Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you so much.
So Kyle and I are a couple, and we're in a very stable relationship, but there was once a time when that wasn't the case. And it came to a point where I said, you either commit or I am leaving. And we wrote a song about it, and it's called Baby I'll Run.
With a heavy heart, I hear all you say. With a heavy heart, it takes on me to stay. With a heavy mind, I wake up on my own. With a weighted sign, I'm feeling all alone. Take my time, get there on my own. Take too long, I'm heading down that road. See these walls built with every stone, cling to cracks where any light is shown. I'm lacing up till you pull me back. Too far gone on a painless track. What's light for you to me's a ton. Try to lay another brick and baby I'll run. With a heavy soul I feel your moods that sway. With a heavy soul it's killing me to stay. With a heavy toll, you're asking me to wait. With a heavy goal to build it all your way. Take my time, get there on my own. Take too long, I'm heading down that road. See these walls built with every stone. To cracks where any light is shown. I'm lacing up till you pull me back. Too far gone on a painless track. What's light for you to me's a ton. Try to lay another brick and baby I'll run. Take my time, get there on my own. Take too long, I'm heading down that road. See these walls built with every stone. Cling to cracks
where any light is shown. I'm lacing up till you pull me back. Too far gone on a painless track. What's light for you to me's a ton. Try to lay another brick and try to lay another brick. Try to lay another brick and baby I'll run.
This next song, it's not your traditional love song. You write love songs usually on your way into relationships, and sometimes on your way out, you can have a love song too. I wrote this one trying to take a high road and always thinking that when you have love, that's a really special thing. And sometimes it doesn't always work out. And for me, what's right is to really wish the best and hope that they find the person that they once were. It's called Dance Again.
Chased what we knew, never account we'd need to leave room for somebody else to squeeze in our world. We dim the things that once made us whole, and though we never rested, we gave and we mastered. Easier taking than going alone. No compass to guide us, we ended divided. And I see you now. I hope you dance again, and I'll hear it through a friend that you're back to the waltzing, and I'm right here strumming my heart out. We took the long road here back to our teenage years. We made so much good, but it came at the cost of our wounds. Me first. Dark in our clouds may not seem now, but open the skies we never allowed. Can't fault ourselves, we just never knew. The shortcuts we thought don't lead to your truth. And though we never rested, we gave and we mastered. Easier taking than going alone. No compass to guide us, we ended divided. And I see you now. I hope you dance again, and I'll hear it through. That you're back to the waltzing, and I'm right here strumming my heart out. We took the long road here back to our teenage years. We made so much good, but it came at the cost of our words. Have gone by, yet I don't feel deprived. They're just lessons we needed in time. When we move forward, it comes with the past. Oh, dance again, and I'll hear it through a friend that you're back to the waltzing, and I'm right here strumming my heart out. We took the long road here back to our teenage years. We made so much good, but it came at the cost of our me first. Before there was you, I was me first.
Hi, this is Jen Grant, and you're listening to CFRC in Kingston.
Hey, it's Emily Steele, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM,